Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 13th, Friday the 13th, 2018. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Well, actually, we'll begin today's reading with the latest breaking news. U of I student injured in officer-involved shooting in Champaign. Champaign. The Illinois State Police are investigating an officer-involved shooting that happened Thursday in Champaign and involved a University of Illinois student who was injured. Police officers and Champaign County Sheriff's deputies responded to a report of a person loading a semi-automatic handgun near John and Locust Streets in Champaign, reported Herald and Review news partner WCIA. After searching the area, officers came in contact with an armed person matching the description of the initial report. Police ordered him to drop the gun, but he didn't, and three officers fired at the man, police said. The 23-year-old University of Illinois student was struck in the leg, police said. Officers on the scene provided first aid until medical personnel arrived. The man was taken to the hospital with injuries not considered to be life-threatening. Police said no officers were injured. The University of Illinois Police Department and the Champaign County Sheriff's Office are following department protocols and state guidelines regarding officer-involved shootings, they said. The state police are leading the investigation into the incident. And now to the front page. 50-year dream realized. Northeast Community Fund breaks ground on larger facility. Decatur. The first tangible steps toward a new, much larger facility for the nonprofit Northeast Community Fund came Thursday after years of planning, fundraising, and dreaming. More than 200 people gathered for groundbreaking ceremonies at the organization's future home at 839 North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. Construction is expected to take about 8 months, with the building and furnishings estimated to cost $2.5 million. This is the culmination of decades of work, Executive Director Jerry Pels said. It's going to make a huge difference. Pels recently started his 50th year of work with the charitable organization. He has long dreamed of more space for staff and the thousands of clients who receive food, financial assistance, and help every year. Individual donors, corporate sponsors, and grants have raised $1.7 million for the project since the campaign began in earnest in June 2016, said Reagan Deering, board president and a volunteer at the organization. Even clients facing financial hardship contributed by donating spare change. Parameters for the project have changed since the initial announcement, when organizers said they wanted to raise $3.9 million for a 20,000-square-foot building. On Thursday, they said the facility would span 17,000 square feet and cost $2 million, with an additional $500,000 for furnishings. Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe described the ceremony as a dream come true and a day that many people never thought would come. But the dedication and teamwork of Decatur residents made it happen. I don't know of any city anywhere who has the kind of people we have in Decatur, who step up and help our brothers and sisters in need, she said. The new facility will make the fifth home for the organization since its founding in 1969. It started in a two-story house at 1119 East Condit Street and then moved to a house at 1128 East Orchard Street, its third home. Its third home, the Lutheran School Elementary building at 1170 East Orchard Street, allowed for food and furniture storage, a clothing room, and a small office. When that building was sold, the community fund moved to the 800 block of North Water Street, where all 8,000 square feet of the unassuming office is devoted to helping clients with food, clothing, household items, and other needs. Most people think the organization is a food pantry, Deering said, and they don't understand the wide range of options available. The new building will help change that perception and increase the number of resources available for clients, she said. Among the clients who attended Thursday's ceremony was Monica Peterson, who for 3 years has been part of the program to assist single parents with gaining self-sufficiency. The organization has made an impact on her life and helped her reach her goals, she said. It's really been a blessing, Peterson said. They really help you with anything, from kids' Christmas to kids' birthdays. Anything you ask, they'll help you. Peterson said she's looking forward to the new building and the extra space that will allow more privacy for clients who need to discuss personal issues. Agencies and city officials hope to create a central location for social services near the Wabash Crossing neighborhood, Pell said. The community fund is proud to be part of it, with the new facility being built adjacent to Crossing Healthcare, a federally qualified health clinic that serves many low and moderate income clients. For 2 years, we've been working and dreaming, Deering said. I couldn't be more excited to begin this project, she said. Northeast Community Fund. Hours, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. The phone number is 217-429-5846. That's 429-5846. The address is 825 North Water Street. And on the web, it's all one word, lowercase, northeastcommunityfund.org. Again, that's northeastcommunityfund.org. To help, donations of food, clothing, and small household goods may be dropped off during center hours. State sweetens Eagle Creek offer in recreation. Illinois to kick in $500,000 to help potential developers. Findlay, the state will provide $500,000 to help with demolishing the Eagle Creek Resort and Conference Center, a Lake Shelbyville development that closed in 2009 because of financial issues and environmental concerns. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources earlier this year sought private developers for the site, but received interest from only one party that met state rules. Andrew Hansen, a spokesman for State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, on Thursday, said a new request for a proposal will include state funding. The closed resort has been an ongoing headache for Lake Shelbyville communities, which lost tax revenue, tourism funding, and, in the case of Shelby County, revolving loan fund money in an attempt to keep the doors open. Shelby County Board Chairman Dave Cruitt said Wednesday that adding the state credit to the August request for proposal could bring more options, including other developers for the resort. Whatever happens, any forward movement on Eagle Creek is a plus, Cruitt said. I really hope this time they, the state that is, get a plan that makes them happy and something can start happening. This has been at a standstill for too long. The IDNR in 2016 estimated improvements, including structural, mechanical, plumbing, and safety upgrades, would cost $17.8 million. Hansen, in an email, said the $500,000 could be used for infrastructure improvements like deconstruction, demolition, construction, or reconstruction of pedestrian walkways, parking, roadways, buildings, outdoor pavilions, outdoor visitor areas, docking, marina, and mooring systems, hardscape and landscape elements. The 138-room resort, along with an 18-hole golf course and other recreational amenities, opened in 1989 at Eagle Creek State Park. The resort went through many developers before closing in 2009 when mold was found throughout the main buildings. The golf course is open. Since then, the state has tried a variety of ways to get developers interested in restoring the resort, including one Decatur firm that began renovations but quit after financial disagreements with IDNR. Earlier this year, John Fahey, owner of Sullivan Marina on the other side of Lake Shelbyville, and Zach Horn, owners of Metro Communications Company, submitted the only bid, but it was rejected. Documents related to the proposal were obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request. Fahey did not immediately respond to a request for comment. In the proposal, Fahey said Horn outlined a 5-year $8.1 million plan to build luxury cabins and other resort lodging along with a marina, 100 boat slips, a pool, and a conference-slash-events clubhouse, among other amenities. Included in the proposal was a $500,000 estimate for demolition. The proposal also said that while the golf course is currently open and would be a significant draw to a reopened resort, it is also expensive to maintain and use. Use has declined since Eagle Creek closed. The proposal seeks a contract from the state to operate the golf course for an annual fee of $250,000 for 5 years until the resort community and lodging are constructed. While IDNR denied the initial proposal, it did say in June it was working with the developers to make the plan acceptable. In civil rights, government reopens Emmett Till murder case. Book inspires new look at slaying of Chicago teen. Birmingham, Alabama. A 2017 book that revealed lies by a key figure in the Emmett Till case has prompted the U.S. government to renew its investigation into the brutal 1955 slaying, a federal official said Thursday. The reopening of the case had stayed quiet until the contents of a federal report came to light earlier in the day. Till relatives and social justice activists welcomed a fresh look at the killing that shocked the country and stoked the civil rights movement, but acknowledged that the passage of time could hamper justice. Hours after news broke about the renewed investigation, a federal official familiar with the matter told the Associated Press that information in the 2017 book was what led federal investigators to re-examine the case. The official wasn't authorized to discuss the matter publicly and spoke to AP on condition of anonymity. The book, The Blood of Emmett Till, by Timothy B. Tyson, quotes a white woman, Carolyn Donham, as saying during a 2008 interview that she wasn't truthful when she testified that the black teen grabbed her, whistled, and made sexual advances at a Mississippi store 6 decades ago. Tyson told reporters Thursday that he was contacted by the FBI weeks after his book was published in January 2017, and he furnished them interview recordings and other research materials. He doesn't think his research alone would support new charges, but said investigators may be able to link it to other material in their possession. It's possible that the investigation will turn up something, but there's nothing that I know of and nothing in my research that is actionable, I don't think, he said. I'm not an attorney or a detective. The reopening of the Till case was disclosed in a federal report sent to lawmakers in March that said the Justice Department had received unspecified new information. The report's contents weren't widely known until Thursday. A potential witness with the 14-year-old Till in the store that day, cousin Wheeler Parker, said Thursday that he has talked with law enforcement about the case in recent months. The prosecutor with jurisdiction over the Mississippi community where Till was abducted, District Attorney Dwayne Richardson, declined to comment on whether federal authorities had given him new information since they reopened the investigation. The Justice Department also declined to comment. It's unclear what new charges could result from a renewal investigation, said Tucker Carrington, a professor at the University of Mississippi Law School. Conspiracy or murder charges could be filed if anyone still alive is shown to have been involved, he said. But too much time likely has passed to prosecute anyone for other crimes such as lying to investigators or in court. The case was closed in 2007, with authorities saying the suspects were dead. Two white men, Donham's then-husband, Roy Bryant, and his half-brother, J.W. Millam, were charged with murder but acquitted in the slaying of Chicago teen Till, who had been staying with relatives in northern Mississippi at the time. The men later confessed to the crime in a magazine interview but weren't retried. Both men are now dead. Donham, who turns 84 this month, lives in Raleigh, North Carolina. A man who came to the door at her residence declined to comment about the FBI reopening the investigation. The government has investigated 115 cases involving 128 victims under the cold case law named Fertil, the March federal report said. Only one resulted in a federal conviction since the act became law. Deborah Watts, co-founder of the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, said it's wonderful her cousin's killing is getting another look, but she didn't want to discuss details. None of us wants to do anything that jeopardizes any investigation or impedes, but are also very interested in justice being done, she said. Abducted from the home where he was staying, Till was beaten and shot, and his body was found weighted down with a cotton gin fan in a river. His mother, Mamie Till, had his casket left open. Images of his mutilated body gave witness to the depth of racial hatred in the Deep South and inspired civil rights campaigns. In the picture, in this September 23, 1955 file photo, there is J.W. Milam left and his wife, second left, Roy Bryant, far right, and his wife, Carolyn Bryant, sit together in a courtroom in Sumner, Mississippi. Bryant and his half-brother, Milam, were charged with murder but acquitted in the kidnap, torture, slaying of 14-year-old black teen Emmett Till in 1955 after he allegedly whistled at Carolyn Bryant. The men later confessed in a magazine interview but weren't retried. Both are now dead. Citing new information, the U.S. Justice Department has reopened the investigation into Till's death. In local and state news, on page A3, Tyus considered for interim city manager, Decatur. The city council will vote Monday on whether to name deputy city manager Billy Tyus as interim city manager. Reached by phone after the council agenda was released Thursday afternoon, Tyus, 46, said he did not want to comment until the council formally considers him for the role. I don't think it would be appropriate, he said, adding, I'm grateful to be considered on Monday. He would start the position July 22nd, the last day Tim Gleason serves as city manager. Gleason in June accepted the city manager position in Bloomington. His first day there is July 23rd. Tyus, a Decatur native who has worked for the city since 2000, was named to the newly created position of deputy city manager in June 2017. Under Gleason, he has been a close deputy, taking the lead on many initiatives related to the city's neighborhood revitalization. He previously served as Assistant City Manager of Development Services, Assistant City Manager for Public Information, Assistant to the City Manager and Public Information Officer. When he was given the additional responsibility of overseeing development services in 2011, Tyus said he didn't take his position with the city lightly. Tyus has a bachelor's degree in finance from Southern Illinois University Carbondale. He completed the Senior Executives in State and Local Government program through the Harvard Kennedy School in June 2017. Before he worked for city government, Tyus was a reporter for the Herald and Review from July 1997 to September 2000. The council plans to hire a search firm to seek a permanent city manager, the city said in a statement. Before the announcement Thursday, some community leaders and residents had already voiced their support for Tyus to take over the position permanently. I have had some people talk to me about giving him a chance, said Sue Lawson, president of the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations. He's easy for us to work with, and he does have a heart for the city. Corey Walker, state president of the Black Chamber of Commerce of Illinois, said he wanted Tyus to be considered for the permanent position as well. He's been here all his life, so who's going to be more creatively passionate for our community than a person who's chosen to be here all his life, Walker said. I just think Billy brings a different perspective. As of last year, Tyus' salary as deputy city manager was $124,979. Under the agreement before the council on Monday, he would receive an additional salary bump of $15,000. The Butterfly Effect, Lincoln College Students Help Monarchs Survive. Lincoln, a lone monarch butterfly, flitted from flower to flower in the restored tall grass prairie at Lincoln College's Campbell Creekside Outdoor Center for Environmental Education, as students toiled in the heat on a research project to benefit the orange and black insect. Loss of habitat has been a problem for monarchs, whose numbers have decreased by 80% in the past 20 years, according to the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. Lincoln College is collaborating with the field on the project that involves gathering information to assess and document available pollinator habitat. The ultimate goal is to increase that habitat and improve conditions for the species' survival. Logan County is unique because it is right in the middle of the regular migration path of the monarchs, explained Julia Osler, lead facility member for the college's conservation biology program. The monarch, which became the state insect of Illinois in 1975, through the efforts of Dennis School students in Decatur, helped pollinate vital plants and provides food to birds such as orioles and grosbeaks. They migrate as far as 3,000 miles to spend winters high in the mountains of Mexico, according to Monarch Watch, a group dedicated to education, conservation, and research. In the spring, the butterflies begin to journey north, but unlike birds, they don't make the entire return trip. Instead, they stop to mate and lay eggs on milkweed plants. Those eggs hatch into caterpillars that eat milkweed before creating a chrysalis and eventually emerging as butterflies. Those butterflies move north a few hundred miles before they continue the process. It can take 5 generations to reach Illinois, according to information from Lincoln College. The first phase of the project included meetings with focus groups and local stakeholders to identify opportunities to create more habitats for pollinators in general and monarchs in particular. Teams of students have surveyed residential areas in town to identify what plants are and aren't available for the monarchs. This week they began surveying natural areas, starting with the restored tall grass prairie at Creekside. Students walked through the prairie and, at certain intervals, used a frame made out of PVC pipe to measure the number of flowering plants available to pollinators within a square meter area. They took particular note of any milkweed plants, but those were largely absent at the site. Milkweed is important because it is the only plant that monarch caterpillars eat. It is also an important food source for adult monarchs. In addition to field work, Junior Kelly Allison of Lincoln, a conservation biology major, has been involved in community outreach. Everybody I talk to is really interested in it and wants to know more information on how to attract butterflies, said Allison. Another conservation biology major involved in the project, sophomore Alex Anderson of Lincoln, said, "I got a little anxious going into people's yards during the residential part of the survey, but when he explained what the project was about, he said residents got excited. I knew what milkweed is, but didn't know how important it was to monarchs," said Anderson. Allison said that they are working on putting together pamphlets and a program to spread information. New owner takes over warehouse. Despite WARN notice, it was closing. Business and jobs will remain in city. Decatur. Macon County Economic Development Leader said Thursday the public notice of a Decatur warehouse closing was triggered by a change in operators and that it will remain operational with 168 workers continuing to be employed there. Jacobson Warehouse Company Incorporated had filed documentation in accordance with the Federal WARN Act, saying that the facility on North 27th Street would close and that the employees would be laid off this month. EDC President Ryan McCrady and Nicole Bateman, Executive Director of the Midwest Inland Port, said the disclosure is required by federal law and doesn't tell the whole story. Jacobson Warehouse was a third-party logistics provider for another local company, they said, and a different third-party business will now assume the same role. They stressed that new operator would maintain the 168 positions and that such transitions are common. McCrady said he was not at liberty to identify the new warehouse operator. The Federal WARN Act requires that workers and communities be notified 60 days in advance about large-scale layoffs and plant closings. Illinois publishes monthly reports online. Jacobson said in its filing that layoffs would take place between July 8th and 21st. The company described the facility closure as permanent and cited relocation as the reason. A spokesperson for XPO Logistics, the parent company of Jacobson, issued the following statement in response to questions. The customer has made the decision to move to another location. We're working to support employees during this transition, which may include a transfer to another site in the area. The Decatur facility is at 2455 North 27th Street. Domestic battery suspects arrested. The mother of a 6-year-old boy, police said, was left bound to a chair in his home basement for hours as punishment, has now been booked on a preliminary charge of domestic battery. The 29-year-old woman was arrested Wednesday morning, according to a sworn affidavit from Decatur police. Her arrest follows the arrest July 2nd of a 31-year-old man described as her live-in boyfriend, who also faces a preliminary charge of domestic battery in the same case. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. The boyfriend is scheduled for a preliminary hearing in Macon County Circuit Court on July 25th, and the woman's court appearance had not been scheduled as of Thursday afternoon. The sworn affidavits outlining the accusations against both adults are identical. Police said the boy told how he was bound in rope around his arms, hands, and chest and stomach, and his mouth duct-taped shut. His two siblings, both younger than 10, backed up his testimony of being left tied in the chair for 2 hours after being carried to the basement by the boyfriend. Here's your chance to win $1,000 in our photo contest, Destinations Photo Contest. Did you travel anywhere this summer? Now's your chance to win up to $1,000 in our Destinations Photo Contest. Now here's how it works. Visit herald-review.com/travel before July 16th. Readers can vote for favorite photos, and photographers who submit entries will be eligible for one of three top prizes: $1,000 for first prize, $500 for second prize, and $250 for third. In addition, anyone who submits an entry to the contest will be eligible for one of three $100 prizes awarded randomly. Many of the best photos will be included in a special 20-page Destinations travel section that will be published August 22nd and distributed in Lee Enterprises newspapers throughout the U.S. Upload your favorite vacation photo now and let your friends know that the contest voting period is July 17th through the 23rd. Again, you can check at herald-review.com/travel. And do that before July 16th. Vacation photographs often capture perfect moments in favorite places. Send us your best ones by July 16th for a chance to win up to $1,000 in our Destinations Photo Contest. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 13th, 2018. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.